Hi everyone, welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Nick Rurkraut.
And I'm Sophia Simonello.
And in today's episode, we, in the past week, have gotten our nominations and some wins with different lists and critics' bodies. And as of recording this morning, the Golden Globe nominations were released. So we'll kind of talk about everything that's been happening in the past few weeks. And to do so, he was on our film festival recap episode talking all about our experiences at Toronto. But Bennett Prosser, welcome back. This is our usual format, I would say. Every year we try to have you on, so this will be a fun conversation and just to see how you're doing also.
Yeah, hey you guys, thanks for having me. I think my presence on this podcast, and I think I've been called my dulcet tones joining the pod, I think always means that it's time to talk about a ton of stuff that has happened in the awards season. And it's also a reminder to me to catch up on all of the awards that have dropped from critics in the past week and maybe look up some regionals, not just the major ones that we're going to talk about today. But it's been a hectic couple weeks, and I'm happy to talk to you guys about it.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you back. It really is. It's like when the Academy has a press release that goes out when a new category is introduced or the shortlists come out. That's how it feels, I think, hopefully for our listeners when you're back. It's just always very exciting to, I think, be talking about this stage in the awards race, because it really is, I think, when things start to feel real. I mean, the industry hasn't really weighed in yet in a real way. We haven't had any guild prizes or anything like that yet, but you start to kind of gauge the temperature of what's going on and what we're going to spend the next few months talking about. So I think we can just kick right off with our critics and where our critics groups are. So we've heard from quite a few. We've heard from the New York Film Critics Circle and the LA Film Critics Association, National Board of Review as well. NBR is its own unique group, I will say, but we've had some off-the-wall prizes over the years. I think I always think back to our very first season when we talked about LA giving their prize to Small Axe, a collection of Steve McQueen films. So it really depends. Are they going to, you know, really forge their own path, or are they going to reward the same film? And this year, both New York and LA have given their best picture prizes to Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another. We will be saying that film title a number of times today, I think, really. And NBR also gave their best picture prize to One Battle as well as Toronto. And we'll see, I think, some other regional prizes as they start to weigh in over the next few months. As a Paul Thomas Anderson fan, I am cautiously optimistic. I'll just leave it there. But I know we also always love talking about best actress. And right now we have, I think, a major contender in Rose Byrne. She has won also at New York and LA and at NBR as well, Toronto, the Best Actress prize for If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. What do you all think about One Battle, I guess, first, but also about Rose and her position in the race? Because I think it was a little shaky maybe at the beginning of the season.
I think for me, I've always been confident in a nomination there, and I'm not trying to speculate on wins at this point, except for, I think, some of those, like you're mentioning, where we're seeing just overwhelming success. And I think on the podcast, we've also been like, oh, will Sinners be happening still because that was such an early release? Or what will Netflix's main push be for? And even from them, we've kind of seen across the board, which we can maybe hint at today, we've seen Frankenstein, Train Dreams, and Jay Kelly kind of get some support in different areas. So I think as of now, One Battle After Another leading the pack just kind of shows how far ahead it is. And I don't say that to jinx anything, but I think because we've seen regional prizes and national prizes and awards go to that movie, that confirms every suspicion that we've had the past couple of months. I think what I like to see also is Sinners really holding its ground in different areas. Yes, we have one mention for that in picture and a regional prize, but everywhere from cinematography, really holding it down, to other technical categories, even Michael B. Jordan, an actor. We see Wunmi Mosaku show up here and there for a supporting actress. So I think, you know, across the board, it's really those two. You mentioned Rose Byrne, and I am surprised that Jessie Buckley hasn't won any of those big prizes. That feels kind of like an LA thing to do, to award her, and maybe New York to award Rose Byrne. But we're seeing Jessie only show up so far with some regional prizes. I'm not worried too much about that. I think the industry, having nominated her before, will lead to some success down the line. But I think this is our main competition here between Jessie and Rose. I don't want to get into like Michelle Yeoh versus Kate, because we saw Kate winning some of those early critics prizes too. But I think this may be tightening our conversation here, which I love. I love both of their performances and films. So again, I'm really happy with this category. And I think just things generally, as we talk about some of these bigger above the line categories. How do you feel, Bennett?
Yeah, I feel like with Best Actress, well, with critics groups voting and other kind of pseudo tangential critic-ish groups like NBR and The Globes and everyone voting early, I feel like between especially these two, One Battle After Another and Rose Byrne, that it's from our seats, we can put some narratives on them that might not exist. But to do that, which I'm about to do, I feel like One Battle After Another getting kind of winning across the board is following through from what I think we all heard while we were on the ground in Toronto, which was that we were watching a lot of great movies, but there was this other movie that people were starting to see that was going to leapfrog everything that we were watching in Toronto. And it feels like kind of a, you know, coming to fruition, that it's just like, yep, this was what we were talking about. It is our favorite movie. So that's the sense that I'm getting from all of the wins for One Battle. I also do think of you, Sophia, every time that the film wins. Not to, again, like you said, not to get too ahead of yourself, but I've watched you have like a prize pony for the past 5 years, and every time it just falls short. And so, rooting for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's been a rough several years, I would say, of being a Paul Thomas Anderson fan, just in terms of awards. Mm-hmm. You know, with output, we are always thriving. Like, I have Phantom Thread in my life. I'm not going to complain. But when it comes to the Oscars, another story. Mm-hmm. So I'm crossing my fingers, cautiously optimistic. But my comparison for Best Actress for you, which I want to hear your thoughts on, I feel like Rose Byrne, she reminds me of how I feel about Isabelle Huppert in Elle that year, where it's just like, critics darling, she'll probably win the trifecta, and she'll be maybe the lone nominee for her film, but maybe at the end of the day she might not win with the industry. We'll see. Again, let's not do winner talk, but just that's the comp I'm thinking of right now. And I think the one that people are wary of is last year, Marianne Jean-Baptiste, who gave the performance of the year in Hard Truths and won the trifecta, but then didn't get in. I think there were a lot of other factors at play, I'll say, to why that nomination didn't happen. I think that Rose going in is a bit stronger on paper with awards chances.
But it feels similar in a way that's different than One Battle winning everything so far. Rose Byrne being up there so much feels, it does feel like a Marianne Jean-Baptiste. It feels like kind of what they did with Drive My Car, that it again, narrativizing it like an intentional, don't forget about this performance, or we actively want to platform it. Because I think what we've heard all year, especially once people started seeing Hamnet, it was just, oh, it's done, write it in ink, the Oscar goes to Jessie Buckley, and never really a thought of even who would be number two. We'll fill out the rest of the ballot, but no other kind of consensus. Oh, what about this other person? So I feel like there might be a bit of that brewing of just, I don't think that I've seen critics have anything bad to say about Jessie Buckley, regardless of some reactions that have come out recently about Hamnet, some, you know, more mixed reactions once it went wide. But it just feels like more of a boost like intentional boosting of Rose than anything against Jesse. And obviously we're still seeing Jesse get nominated in all of the core places, like Critics' Choice and Globe and everywhere. So
yeah, I think that's right. I think it's critics making a statement and wanting to really give her that extra boost. Something is happening right now with Hamnet, with critics, I think, kind of pushing up against it. It's a movie that I think some critics have dubbed uncool, or, you know, it's not one of those like exciting movies to root for. I think it has some polarizing responses online, but I don't actually think that any of those responses will translate to the industry. That just feels like a New York and LA critics thing that we're going to see. But now that those critics groups have finished voting, I do think we can expect to see Hamnet maybe pick up some steam in other places. I mean, it did win every audience award when you think about it. So I kind of always saw this movie as a movie that does better in later stages of the season than in the early phase of critics voting. But I think another cluster of films that have been doing really well are Neon's international titles. So The Secret Agent getting runner-up in picture at LA, runner-up in actor for Mora, and being the winner in international feature there. It Was Just an Accident won their screenplay prize, and Panahi won director at New York Film Critics Circle. It also won international feature there. Stellan Skarsgård won supporting actor at LA for sentimental value, and Surratt also picked up score with LA Film Critics. So I think we're seeing a lot of support for the international titles that Neon picked up. How do you guys see these coming into the Oscar race? I feel like we might talk about this later when we get into what the Picture 10 could look like, but I feel like because the Academy has become more international in recent years, I think the critics making a statement with some of these films and really stumping for them, I think we could see that actually as we get into industry prizes too.
Yeah, I feel like the ones that jumped out the most to me of that list are It Was Just an Accident and a lot of rallying around Panahi, which I know has been felt all year after he won the Palm at Cannes this year. And there's generally just been a big swell of support around him, and we're seeing it come through in nominations and wins as well. I think he won the film won, I think, three Gothams, or at least a handful of Gotham Awards as well. It feels like I agree with you that just the kind of the Neon slate, when they went on just that buying spree of Palm contenders back at Cannes, that it's maybe not a bad tactic, not only to get the Palm, but then also they have all year with a lot of great films that are going to do well and they can celebrate pretty nicely. But along with the Panahi, I'd say The Secret Agent also showing up in Wagner Mora everywhere. That seems to be just popping up in more places than I expected to. So I think it's great. When you mentioned Neon, I also think of the films that Mubi picked up back in Cannes, and my favorite, Sound of Falling, and it showed up a couple places, but I wish it was showing up a little more. I know it's, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't expect it to be everywhere, but maybe if Neon had picked it up, it would have been in as many places as all of these are. But yeah, and every time that Surratt is mentioned, I think of you, Nick. How are you doing? How happy are you whenever you see Surratt? Because you loved it.
Yeah, I love Surratt. And I think that it's even shown up with these international prizes and nominations makes me really excited that it does have a chance with Oscar. I kind of wrote it off because it's difficult, but the fact that it even has a Globe nomination and it's up for sound at the Critics' Choice Awards, but that it's been winning score prizes just makes me so happy that it has potential beyond the international feature category as well. I think as we talk about Neon, we don't see some key international features in AFI, but I also think about last year with the LA critics giving Fernando Torres runner-up, and we're just seeing Wagner Mora across the board winning prizes and in runner-up at LA again, that The Secret Agent, It Was Just an Accident, and Sentimental Value, we've been talking about sentimental value all year long, but I think it's really these three have shown that they are in the Best Picture race for Oscar, and I would kind of be shocked to not see them. So I think when we're looking at all of these lists that I'm mentioning, we have Avatar, Fire and Ash, Begonia, and Wicked for Good. And I think it's maybe those, at least for me, are easy ones to swap out for some of these international features. Because like you said, these new members are more and more from different countries. And not only do we not have to think of them, but I think just the quality of film is showing us that they are good contenders to be in this race. And if that actually happens, I would actually be very happy with the top 10 that we're kind of talking about right now for that.
Yeah, me too. And I think we do have to really think about It Was Just an Accident, Sentimental Value, and The Secret Agent all getting in. Like, that just to me feels actually like a pretty realistic thing. I think at the beginning of the season, we were maybe thinking, oh, well, it's, you know, Neon has all of those titles. Can all three actually get in? Well, I mean, why not? Right? The Secret Agent has been one of those that's kind of hovering in my 10 spot for a really long time. I pop it in and out. And I think with its performance at the Globes today, which we'll talk about more broadly, and just how critics are backing it up, that I think is that kind of, to bring up Drive My Car again, this is another example of one of those that just gets in really on the passion of the film. And I think It Was Just an Accident and Sentimental Value have proven to be strong. I think early, right, with the Gothams and with New York Film Critics Circle, some people were saying Sentimental Value was on life support, but they were ignoring the fact that it led European Film Award nominations, and that tends to be a good precursor. So I think all three sound good to get in. And then I feel like there's some vulnerability with Jay Kelly and Train Dreams. I feel like those Netflix titles, actually, those are a little bit weaker maybe than we think. I mean, aside from Avatar and Wicked, which, yeah, that's another conversation. But I actually feel like Begonia maybe scratches the same kind of itch that some of the international titles do. Yorgos Lanthimos has a big following, so I could actually see that one making it in at the end of the day.
Obviously, we've said it multiple times that nothing so far has come from the industry. It's just been from people that are yelling at the industry, and the industry is trying or maybe not trying to avoid. But from what we've seen so far, there seems to be a coalescing around, I'd say, around like seven movies that feel pretty good. And those last three slots is, I think, a lot of what, where a lot of the movies that you were just talking about, Sophia, kind of fall into. It's The Secret Agent, it's Train Dreams, it's Jay Kelly, Begonia, maybe Avatar and Wicked. You know, there's a chunk of movies fighting for the last three. That's where I'm becoming more and more interested, you know, as things kind of start to settle, at least from what are the names that we hear the most about. Then I start getting really, like, really excited about the minutiae of who's number 10 and who's number 11.
I mean, and that reminds me of Nickel Boys and Sing Sing from last year, too, just being so on the bubble, like, is it going to happen? So
I feel like Train Dreams feels like, obviously, it's from many of the same team that made Sing Sing. And I think that its release and its kind of steady growth of buzz as the year's gone along, I feel better about Train Dreams than I did about Sing Sing. Because remember last year we were talking about how Sing Sing was just, it had completely disappeared. It was in theaters early and then fell off the face of the earth and never came back around. But Train Dreams, I feel maybe a little better about than you do, Sophia. I think it's popped up in a fair number of places. That it's even like getting any nominations from the Globes feels big for it. It just feels bigger than I think what we thought it was maybe 4 months ago. And there's been enough people beating the drum that it's actually still in the conversation.
It definitely feels like that passion pick and the discovery for Netflix. Mm-hmm. Like, it was one of those movies that I think was written off a little bit. Or, you know, when it came out at Sundance, people really liked it. But then they started, I don't know, looking at other movies instead, looking at the big buzzy titles that were coming in the fall festival season. And I think that the problem is, though, is that Frankenstein is just such a juggernaut for Netflix that I wonder if there's any room for a second title to come up and really make a dent. I think it's possible for sure. And I think it definitely has a lot of fans. I mean, getting the cinematography win for LA, that was a great win. And yeah, seeing Joel Edgerton pop up, getting a song in at the Globes too. So I think it definitely has potential, but it is one of those for me where I'm just thinking, well, I don't know. Those final spots are always so dicey in the year of 10 we have now.
Yeah.
And why I think Train Dreams has a better chance at getting in picture and some of the other categories amongst some of the other wins that we've mentioned, cinematography. I think the song one is interesting. It intrigues me. I don't know if I have it in my top five for the Oscar nominations right now, but I look at the Spirit nominations that we also got. And yes, that slate of nominees is so different to last year because Anora picked up so many of those top prizes. It's different this year in that Peter Hujar's Day topped the nominees with five, and then Sorry Baby and Train Dreams, amongst other films, had four. So I think that there is support in the indie community for Train Dreams. That kind of makes me feel better about it showing up where we want to. And even though Joel Edgerton, yes, has a Globe nomination, but didn't get any critics' prizes, I think there is that growing support that you're mentioning, Bennett, that is partly word of mouth. It's partly for the adapted screenplay. And there's just this beauty behind it that I can see that showing in some categories. And then also, I think with the Spirit nominations, it gives me hope, probably falsely, but that Sorry Baby had four nominations and that we're seeing Ava Victor show up in other wins and categories, I think really excites me for them. Sorry Baby, again, is one of my favorite movies of the year and gives me some hope. There's an inkling of hope that they can show up in screenplay for the Oscar. So I'm kind of holding on to that for now. I know the Spirits are their own thing, but I think there's enough there as to our conversation on Train Dreams, at least for right now, to keep that in, I would say, at least three categories.
If Sorry Baby gets an original screenplay nomination at the Oscars, I will be ecstatic.
I'm going to throw a
party. I'll be so happy. Yeah. I love that movie so much. And yeah, Ava Victor deserves to be an Oscar nominee. Mm-hmm. And I was really happy that they got a Golden Globe nomination too.
A lead that drama acting nomination.
Yes.
That was really wild and totally deserved. But like, I had to go back and reread it because I was like, oh no, the movie just got in. I was like, oh, that must have been listed for screenplay. And I was looking at it wrong. To get a lead drama acting nomination is feels very like fancy. So very happy for
them. Too. Oh. Yeah, it's like it is fancy. I like that. So talking about the Golden Globes.
Not to call the Globes
this
fancy.
This was a whole thing this morning. The Globes will never be fancy, but they have improved, I think, over the years. I think looking at some of these nominations today, there were of course some that made me scratch my head as always and think, okay, Globes are gonna globe, aka Emily Blunt and the Smashing Machine. But I think there were some surprises in these Globe nominations and some really cool picks. So One Battle After Another led with 9 nominations, getting in for picture, director, and screenplay, all for PTA. And then multiple acting nominations, Leonardo DiCaprio, Chase Infinity, Sean Penn, Benicio Del Toro, and Tiana Taylor. Nick, I'm going to give you all of the kudos because when we reviewed One Battle, I was going on this whole Sean Penn thing, thinking he was going to win. And you were like, no, it's Benicio. So I'm going to give that to you.
Thank you. I felt it. Yeah. I don't know. It feels way more Oscar. They've both won. And I think that's interesting that could be our conversation when I wouldn't have posed it as that at the very beginning. But Benicio, again, showing up with lots of critics' prizes. I would say that is kind of the wrench that's been thrown into the conversation that we have had so far. And I think that's a good wrench to have thrown in based on, you know, that, but also other categories, we're really not sure what's happening yet, or it's kind of in the mix. I think that's also with supporting actress happening. And like you said, Teyana Taylor being mentioned, she won at LA, Amy Madigan won at New York, and Inga Ibb's daughter Lilius won at NBR. Those three, I would say, are our top nominees showing up. But then who else? You know, we have Glenn Close showing up, or, you know, even Regina Hall. Like, could that happen?
These being your like wishful.
Well, that's wishful. But then, you know, we have these possible doubles. We also have Elle Fanning for Sentimental Value there. So it's like Hope Diction. Will we have a double? What is happening? There are a lot of things going on at the same time.
Yeah. Supporting actress is fascinating. Also, like, the Amy Madigan thing. I mean, I thought that was like a few months ago. I thought, you guys are crazy. Yes. That's not happening. And then here she is. Aunt Gladys is casting her spell. And she is winning prizes. I feel like people are just really passionate about this performance. It's really fun. It's different. It's something we don't see. And it's a career resurgence for Amy Madigan, too, a former nominee. That's always cool. I think with Benicio, I think right now what we're seeing with him is just that he is, I think, maybe someone who feels better to vote for as an actor and a character for critics groups. He has some of the best lines in the movie, some of the best scenes. And, you know, when he goes and picks up Bob at the end of the movie, like, people love that. I think that's like something that really sticks with you in a way that, I don't know, Lockjaw. To say he's prickly is a complete understatement. Like, this is someone who is basically Popeye. So I think that that will work really well with actors. So I think we could see, I don't know, we might have a situation where they are one and two in the category. I don't know. That one's interesting. And then I think supporting actors, we have a lot more variety, like you were saying.
In supporting actress, Amy Madigan and Inga Ibb's daughter Lilius feel like, again, to narrativize, different versions of, if you just keep talking about these people, then they will stay in your mind. Like, like you're saying, when Weapons came out earlier this year, that Amy Madigan's amazing, she should be nominated, and that just never quieted down enough that now she is showing up places. It feels like if no one had kept talking about that, then, I don't know, maybe it would have just not been on people's minds, right? And then similarly with Inga Ibb's daughter Lilius, yes, Sentimental Value has a lot of heat, and there are people watching the film talking about the film a lot, and all of its actors, but she's by far the least known of the actors and has the quietest performance. The other actor from the film in her same category is a famous Hollywood actress who has a role that's like, there's more juice, there's at least more to talk about. So I love that she won NBR and is showing up, I think, in runner-up a couple places and is getting nominated everywhere, as won a performance in, yes, like a movie that's beloved, but a performance itself that is really getting there on merit and does not, you know what I mean? Like, could have so easily just been set aside. But I love her showing up everywhere. It's really exciting.
Me too. Love her. It's a great performance. It was one of those two where I think what happened for a lot of people in walking out of that movie, and this was my reaction when I saw it at Cannes, was, who was that? Like, who is she? I've never seen her before, and I thought she was great. And she and Renata, I think, play off of each other so well, I think, especially in the ending of that movie. So, yeah, I'm thrilled that she's showing up here. And Amy Madigan, every interview this woman gives, I just love her more and more, actually. Nick, you need to read the one specifically where she talks about the drag community embracing it. Gladys, it's great.
As they have, as everyone did for Halloween, I think that it's so bizarre. And, you know, we're talking about The Substance so much last year, but the fact that she alone could get one an Oscar nomination, but also one for hair and makeup, is just so fascinating to me. And, you know, that shows her power. And I hope it does continue.
Yeah. I hope so too. I think it's fun. And so, like I mentioned, One Battle had 9 nominations. I neglected to mention also its score nomination that it picked up. Sentimental Value was next with 8. So that did very well here, picking up. Again, a lot of these movies did very well in our performance categories. So picture, director, screenplay, lead actress for Renata Reinsve, Elle Fanning, and Inga Ibsdottir-Lilias got in, and Stellan Skarsgård. It also picked up international feature. Sinners was next with 7. I think with Sinners, what's interesting is we did have some misses here. I feel like people were really hoping that Delroy Lindo might have a chance this season in supporting actor. Wunmi Misaku, I think she still has a chance to show up places. I think that's really possible. I think especially at SAG, we could see her. And she did win the Gotham Award in supporting performance, but she wasn't here. Instead, this movie just picked up 3 nominations for Coogler in picture, director, and screenplay. Michael B. Jordan did get into actor. And then we also saw score and the box office achievement category, which is what it is. And then Hamnet had 6. So those same big 3 up at the top, picture, director, screenplay, and then acting nominations for Jesse Buckley and Paul Mescal, and then score for Max Richter. So those were our big nomination leaders of the day. Did you guys have any thoughts on any favorite nominations? I know we've talked through a few, or any misses you want to point out?
Is now the time to slowly like lift the Band-Aid, even not rip it off, but lift the Band-Aid a little bit on Wicked, if we're talking about things that missed at the Globes. And yeah, Harkening back in one case to Critics' Choice, that Wicked did not get a picture nomination in musical or comedy.
Yeah.
Which feels pointed.
I mean,
I don't, like, Nouvelle Vague.
It does.
Over Wicked for the Globes. And I know that they are, just comparing those two in terms of Globes-y qualities, mm-hmm, I know that the Globes are trying to be fancier, if we're calling them fancy now, but also generally more international, more respectable, which produces a lot of great nominations. But that is a really interesting place to miss, where it otherwise got 5 nominations, Wicked for Good, both actresses, 2 songs. So, but they still put both songs in, but they couldn't put it in for picture.
Yeah, that was my thing, the songs. Both of those Stephen Schwartz songs, which I think, Nick, we effectively roasted on our review with Connor and Dylan on that episode.
And then, of course, the aforementioned box office achievement one. But yeah, it missing in picture at the Globes, and then Cynthia missing in actress at Critics' Choice felt like the biggest kind of signs that the tides have turned a little bit on the movie. I mean, when we were just talking about Best Actress, Nick, you were listing people off, and I was like, and Ariana? And Ariana? And you were like, Glenn Close. And I was like, and Ariana? So I don't know. I mean, I think there's only time for the mood to get worse on Wicked. I don't think it's gonna recover anything. Yeah. So I think they would appreciate if the nominations were like tomorrow.
That's a good way to describe it. Like, I don't think it's going to get better. Exactly. For that movie, it's also not holding as well as people thought it would at the box office. So it's not going to, I think, be as big of a phenomenon really as the first when it comes to awards, certainly, and just where it lives in the cultural consciousness. And it's just going to, I think, get eaten up by the Christmas releases that are coming that people haven't seen yet. So yeah, I mean, if Arrivo can't get in at Critics' Choice and the film can't get in a split picture category, that just spells doom for it, I think. They have to make up a lot of ground on this one, I think, if we are going to see those bigger nominations.
I think they're really going to rely on Tex and those getting nominations, and it's kind of like a hope for the very best in terms of picture. My thing with the Globes is, you know, split category, comedy or musical, and you could argue that none of these are comedies or musicals. In what world, like, are we laughing at Emma Stone shaving her head? Are we laughing at Lee Byung-hun's character killing people and no other choice. It's like every single movie.
I think he's funny in No Other Choice.
There are portions of that movie.
I also think Timmy's really funny in Marty Supreme too. I think in certain moments, but it's always like a moment. Yeah, thing. It's not like the full energy of the movie.
I think they are dramas first, comedies second. But again, that's kind of a conversation we have every year. Just a funny thing to note there. And my other thing was with Song and Wicked getting both of those in. I just don't have room for them to have two at the Oscars. I really loved Little Amelie showing up in animated. I've kind of been feeling that for a while, and it's a very sweet movie. Not that that has like a huge chance of winning against K-pop Demon Hunters, but it's a kind of a weird category where we're looking at Arco, which is also a good film, and the other two Disney movies, and wondering if they'll get one or two. And the other thing that made me laugh is Avatar Fire and Ash hasn't come out yet, but it's still in the cinematic and box office achievement category, hoping that it will make $2 billion again. Like, okay. But I'm, again, happy to not put that or Wicked in my picture 10 at the moment.
That also made me laugh so hard. I also neglected to mention Sinners did get a song nomination. We saw I Lied to You show up there. And Nick, you saying you don't have room for both Wicked songs at the Oscars. I don't have room for both Wicked songs or both Sinners songs. I think it's one of each.
Yeah.
And part of the reason is because Diane Warren, she's never nominated at the Globes, but she'll be there Oscars. And she has a song.
She's relentless.
She is Diane Warren. Relentless.
Did she write her song though? Because it's by Kesha.
She wrote
I think
it.
That
she
did. I think okay. You're saying, yeah, Kesha just performed it.
Okay.
Yeah. And I came unprepared to talk about song today. So I will, on a future pod, I will have my screed. But I will say, looking even just at last year, for the songs nominated at the Globes and Critics' Choice, they did not have complete overlap, but the only songs from the two lists that got nominated at the Oscars were the two Emilia Perez songs. So
oh my God.
They are not predictive of what'll happen at the Oscars. So usually don't. I look at them and I laugh and I have fun. And I say, okay, who are the celebrities? Mm-hmm. But it usually...
What is our Emilia this year?
Oh, no. I saw a clip of that speech floating around and I was like, please don't. Too. Let's not do that again. Yeah, I mean, just looking at these nominees, I mean, I think I will say, I'll go back and also say I do laugh very hard at all of Leo's scenes in One Battle. I mean, a number of things from that movie I think are really funny, but it's definitely more satire.
Yeah.
The one that made me laugh, Nick, that is not a comedy or a musical, is Kate Hudson getting nominated for Song Sung Blue in Actress. I don't want to spoil the movie, but if you look up the true story of what happened to this woman, you will learn that there's no way this could
comedy.
Be a true
oh,
comedy.
Oh, oh, no.
In fact, at times this is verging on like over-the-top drama.
Oh, no.
Like unbelievable levels of sadness and drama in this movie. And it feels like more like a soap opera. And I actually think that it should have been campier. Like, I think we should have leaned fully into the comedy musical bent. So I thought that was interesting that she was there. But yeah, that movie, just getting one nomination, I think is a good thing, because then we won't have to hear too much about it later in the season. I do think it's interesting, just a few more snubs. When we look at that comedy musical category, though, J. Kelly not being here, those the only nominations for that film being George Clooney and Adam Sandler. That is, I think, a sign of weakness for that film. I feel like the industry could maybe embrace it a bit more, but it's been missing left and right in a number of categories where I think we could have seen it. Is this thing on? The Searchlight Bradley Cooper feature that actually had a really positive response out of New York Film Festival, not here anywhere, totally blanked. I expected that to maybe appear here or there. Nothing for Rental Family. Brendan Fraser not here. I think I expected that to maybe show up with the Globes. And then also, I think with Train Dreams, again, just bringing it around back around to that, just getting Joel Edgerton and Song. I don't know. I think I expected more.
I meant to say this, but Nick, when you were talking about Indie Spirits and Train Dreams, I liked kind of the angle that you were looking at it from, where the Indie Spirit nominations this year are so not Oscar-y, and there's very little overlap with anything else that we've talked about today. Maybe a handful of films showing up there, like Train Dreams and Sorry Baby and If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. But otherwise, just a ton of, I presume, great independent films that I'm excited to see. But I just looking at those nomination lists, I think that because they're all of our Best Picture contenders, because there's such little overlap with American indie cinema, that Train Dreams does feel like something that that community can really rally around and be their prize horse in the, you know, Best Picture race. And nominations for Best Picture are based on passion, and then the win is based on consensus. So to get the nomination, having, you know, if there's like an American indie block of voters in the Academy, then looking at that list, at least it seems like Train Dreams is the one that they'll be going for, if, you know, if they were at least kind of voting from within. So I liked kind of looking at it from that angle, and why I still feel good about it at this point, even though, like Sophia, it didn't show up at the Globes. I don't expect it to, but then, like we said, Sorry Baby showed up everywhere at the Globes. So who knows?
It's like, who knows? Who knows at this point? I mean, the Globes are constantly changing, so we don't know. And again, there's no industry crossover here. So it really, it's just one of those early ceremonies that I think can give us, you know, it's a good pulse check, but there are some other movies here that didn't do as well as expected. Like, I thought Marty Supreme would do a lot better. I was hoping Gwyneth Paltrow would show up in supporting. I was hoping that score would get in. I love that score. Mm-hmm. That to me is, that's my version of the Surratt score, Nick. That's like my mood booster, electro inspired
score. I can't wait for that to come out for sure.
Oh, it's so good. But then also, what's going on with The Testament of Anne Lee? Because I think I was maybe thinking that could appear here. Sometimes the Globes do like recognizing two women in director. Remember when Payal Kapadia got in last year in director? That was a surprise. So I was kind of hoping maybe Mona Fastbold would show up. But just Amanda Seyfried in actress, comedy, or musical.
And that movie only at the Spirit Awards showed up in editing. And I think the fact that it's showing up, but in one place, Seyfried is the place that I would have expected it, but that the tech showed up like really threw me for a loop. I would love for it to show up. I don't think there's place at this point in director. I think if it were a different conversation we were having where The Brutalist was winning all of these critics prizes, then maybe there would be chances for it to show up in other places. I mean, score, cinematography, actress, I think is totally right. Possibly screenplay. I mean, it's just a different world that we would be looking at. That I think where we are now is just really hoping for anything. And I don't know if that's disdain for the movie, for whatever reason that is, for its length or focus, or problems with the character. Like, there are things, but I really enjoyed it. So
yeah,
we're all fans.
Is upsetting.
Yeah.
I wonder, again, like Nick, you said there could be many, many reasons. There's something like a logistics reason that keeps pinging for me with Testament of Anne Lee that got picked up so late. And there were a lot of questions of whether it would be coming out this year or not, that I think it missed out on a lot of conversations when it, even after it had premiered, that at least the reads that I were getting was that it was being put on ice to maybe talk about next year. And then it got picked up and they said it's coming out this year, and it just felt behind. And then it has a lot to overcome. Not only just it is a musical and they submitted it for musical, it's not a traditional one. It's not a traditional film in many ways, but I think that fighting that, I know we heard a lot in the room at our press screening and the reactions afterwards that there were a lot of people who just were not maybe planning to talk about the movie after it came out and had written it off pretty quickly. So to my mind, the combination of, I think that there's a fair amount of film press, awards press, who never took it seriously, and then it didn't get its release until pretty late, or at least confirmed that it would even be in the race this year. So then it was just totally behind.
I think that's a really good point, actually, of why its award season journey, aside from just subject matter in response to the film, why it could maybe be left out of a lot of places.
I think just some actor things also to note, you know, we're looking at possibly Seyfried getting in. I don't know if that is a SAG thing or not a SAG thing, but we definitely have some SAG inclined nominees here at the Globes. I think with Emily Blunt and Dwayne The Rock Johnson for The Smashing Machine, those I would have more expected to show up there because we've kind of written them off otherwise this award season. So again, do I have room for them? Not currently. In supporting actor, that is really my six that we're looking at for Oscar, with Jacob Elordi and Adam Sandler fighting for that fifth spot. I think it's really going to be a coin toss, but I'm erring on the side of Jacob Elordi right now. It's like going back and forth, and now I've gone the other way. And then tied to Jay Kelly and what you said about that movie, I kind of have expected it to show up in screenplay. On our previous episode, we gave it the screenplay win, and it hasn't shown up. So I think that's the big thing for me. In an above-the-line category that you're looking for to add up to a picture nomination, and it missing there was kind of a big thing for me, because I would have put it in otherwise.
Screenplay is interesting because the Globes do a combined category. So adapted and original are included where the Oscars split them. So it's possible it still gets in its screenplay at the Oscars, but original is stronger. So if you just look at the Golden Globes list, Marty Supreme's Sinners, It Was Just an Accident, and Sentimental Value, 4 of the 6 slots are original. So if those 4 were to repeat at the Oscars, that just leaves room for one more. Whereas One Battle After Another and Hamnet, just 2, that leaves slots for 3 more on the adapted side. So original's a little bit more competitive, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. And with adapted, we have all of those Netflix movies really fighting against each other. We have Frankenstein, Trey Dreams, and Wake Up Dead Man. So it's kind of funny. And then Jay Kelly, obviously an original. But again, that, at least for me right now, is fighting with Sorry Baby. So we still have some ways to go, I would say, in the award season. But these are our big first barometers, or maybe like second set of barometers to other things we've talked about previously with festivals and whatnot.
I also had a couple things as I was reviewing all the nominations that jumped out as ones that we haven't mentioned, but were either made me very happy or were just general surprises. A great instance of Critics' Choice using their powers for good and nominating The Perfect Neighbor for Best Editing. To put it, everyone talks about how documentaries should be showing up in editing a lot more than they do, because that editing being such a significant proportion of what is done to create that film. Good for Critics' Choice. Don't say that too often, but very happy that that was able to get there via consensus.
A rare comment.
I also loved all of the love for My Father's Shadow at the Gothams. It won Breakthrough Director, and then Chope Desiru won for lead performance. The Gothams kind of killed it in general this year, and that is such a great movie that everyone should seek out. I know, Nick, you saw it like right after the Gothams, right?
Yeah, I saw it last week and I was so happy. That's another one in international feature I would love to show up in the shortlist at least next week, but might be really tight to get into the top 5.
Yeah, I agree. I would love for it to show up. I don't have many expectations that it will, but I was just thrilled at what happened to the Gothams. And then the last one that was a surprise to me coming from, I guess it won Best Documentary at the Gothams and New York Critics and LA Critics. It was My Undesirable Friends, Part One, Last Air in Moscow. I don't think mm-hmm. that there's a lot of consensus on what documentary is going to be this year. There isn't kind of like a clear front runner. And this one came up. I don't think that I had heard of it. I was looking it up. It played New York Film Fest last year, and it is mm-hmm. 5 hours long. And I don't know if this is just going to be a critics thing and they're just very excited about it, but that just like winning, I think, the only three documentary awards that have gone out so far, that really surprised me. Mm-hmm. Have you guys heard of that one? Or was that on your radar?
It was, but only because I remember it playing at Film Forum, and I remember seeing the runtime and where they put the intermission and just thinking, wow, this is a marathon. Like, good for everyone doing this. Amazing dedication to cinema. I need to watch this still. I'm definitely going to set aside some time to watch this at home because I've heard nothing but great things, and clearly, you know, the critics weighing in, and the Gothams are so interesting. So I went to the Gotham Awards this year. It's always, you know, it's a really fun thing that I've gotten to do for the past few years. And what happens there usually is that because you have juries, really small groups of people voting on these awards, you get really interesting results that are sometimes completely different from what the critics go with or what the industry will go with. And that's definitely what happened this year. It was actually a reminder for me looking at some of the nominations to say, oh, I actually need to watch that. My Father's Shadow, I really enjoyed that when I saw it at Cannes. And I think, yeah, this is one of those, I think, like little movie that could types of situations that we see sometimes in the international feature race. It's a great directorial debut, and it highlights a part of the world that we hardly ever see in the international feature race, even though it's a UK submission. And yeah, I mean, with what the juries were saying at that ceremony, I think they really wanted to go against the grain with some of those picks, like seeing Chope Derisu win lead performance against people like Rose Byrne, Amanda Seyfried, Josh O'Connor, like people who have been in the industry or who are being praised by people who are working in Hollywood right now. That felt significant, like they were trying to boost someone and say, watch this movie, check out this performance. And I think that's definitely what they did with Panahi as well, giving him opportunities to give three speeches. I will say, though, that the biggest applause of the entire ceremony, it was for Benicio del Toro. When that clip played and his name was read, that was the biggest applause. Like, that was when people were most excited. And I think even in highlighting those other movies, giving One Battle Best Feature at the end of the night, PTA gave a great speech, and opening the ceremony with Tiana Taylor, Regina Hall, and Chase Infinity, it's like, okay, this is the movie. Like, this is the one this year. So it was, yeah, it was a really fun experience overall. I mean, obviously thrilled to see PTA win something and give a speech. But yeah, the winners are always interesting because they're juried. Like, five people in the industry decide on the results for one of those categories. But I will point out that the best film jury included president of the Academy, Janet Yang. Read into that what you will.
This insider trading.
Yeah. I was like, okay, well.
Well, there you go.
That maybe that's what she wants to win Best Picture. I love it.
Well, it's so weird, Sophia. You just tossed your hair. I don't know. I don't know what you're...
Toss. No, again, cautiously optimistic. As Sensei says, okay. Ocean waves. Okay. Ocean waves. We're going to be calm. Be good.
Well, I think this was a good chat to start things off. Next week, on Tuesday the 16th, we get our Oscar shortlists in all of our normal categories. Don't forget, we also have casting this year to think about in terms of categories. We haven't really talked about that today, but I think a lot of the movies that we have mentioned will be in that conversation. So maybe we bring that up a little bit then or later in the season. But thank you, Bennett, for joining us. We'll see you very soon. Look at the song list. Let us know what you think about the doubles, about Diane Warren's appearance, about any other favorites. Because, that is some of our most fun content, I will say, during the award season.
I was going to say, you can, by the time that this episode is in your feeds, you should be able to find my playlist of all of the submitted best original songs on Spotify. My profile is bennett.prosser, or you can, I'll also probably link to it from Blue Sky, potentially Letterboxd, where I'm also Bennett Prosser. So we'll start with just the submissions, so you can listen to all. I think the number is 68 this year, which is actually down. It's a down year. But you can listen to all, hopefully all 68, as many that are streaming, or links to where you can find them on YouTube or elsewhere. I always track those down. And then when I'm back next time, I will talk about it.
Okay, great. I'm excited for the rundown and the playlist so I can listen to all of them. And I also always just love your stories about like, oh, this is a great workout song. Like Nick, when you're listening to like an animated
film song, what song from
Smile 2. Yeah.
Smile 2, oh my God, wait. Blood on White Satin showed up in my top five.
Five?
You should be so happy. I think it was number two.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. That is incredible. So thank you again, Bennett, for joining us today. You'll be back really soon. Mm-hmm. Thank you all for listening. If you like our show, please feel free to rate, review, and follow. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, TikTok at Oscar Wilde Pod. And for bonus content, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWilde. We also have updated nomination predictions, and we'll be adding some more categories soon at oscarwilde.squarespace.com.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.